All right, let's talk about controls. And this time, for the integration section, since there were multiple engineers involved, I got some backup.
Hey!
So the two of us are going to talk about the ins and outs of integration, which is, as my colleague here mentioned earlier, an oft-overlooked part of control systems, where you can create the best controller in the world, but if you implement it on an actual piece of hardware in the real world, it may or may not actually do anything.
Things get messy when you stop being in the pure math world.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And so we're going to hopefully guide you through the process of taking your fancy-dancy new control system that you've tuned and modeled and created and actually make it do real things with real hardware.
Make it connect to the real world.
Yep. And the first part of that is going to be starting with sensors, because without a sensor, there's not a whole lot you can do with controls, at least closed loop, which we talked about last time. So sensors are a complicated thing to talk about because they come in all different shapes and sizes. There's tens of thousands of sensors that do all sorts of different things and measure all sorts of different phenomena. And so I can't run through every type of sensor. It's just going to be too much. So what I chose to do was basically to talk about where sensors are used and how they're used. So different categories of sensors and how you can basically use a general type of sensor to measure a general type of thing depending on your particular scenario.
How you want the signal that the sensor produces to relate to the thing you're measuring.
The thing you're controlling, yeah.
Yes.
And therefore the thing you're measuring, exactly. To that point, basically the first type of sensor would be a direct sensor, which is a sensor that measures directly the thing you are controlling. So you're controlling temperature, you measure the temperature. You're controlling pressure, you measure the pressure, and so on. That's the easiest way to do it, because then you just directly map what you are measuring to the actual control signal you're expecting, and your controller knows how to deal with. It's super easy. You just need to basically deal a little bit with acquisition and processing, which Simon will talk about.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, everything is ready to go off the shelf. The complicated part comes when either you can't directly measure that phenomena because of the actual implementation of the system. Maybe it's a sealed pressure vessel and you can't actually get sensor signals out of it. Or maybe it's in space, or maybe it's inside high radiation situations or things like that.
Where your sensors might mess with the system itself.
Yeah, exactly. There's all sorts of different reasons why you might not be able to measure directly the thing that you want to control. And so for that, the next more straightforward way of doing it would be a derived sensor. Where a derived sensor measures, it's still directly relatable to what you want to measure or what you want to control, but it's either the derivative or the integral of it. So there's a very, very well-known, well-quantified relationship between what you're measuring and what you want to control. And some examples of that are things like, if you wanted to measure the orientations of something, you might use a gyro. The gyro won't directly tell you the angle it's at, but it tells you the angular velocity. And so over time, using an integral, you can figure out probably roughly how it's moved and what position it's in now. And the same with accelerometers. If you want to figure out the orientation of something in a different direction, you might use an accelerometer to tell you where gravity is. And based on where gravity is, you know where it's facing. So there are different ways that you can use sensors that measure the derivative or the integral or even the double derivative of what you want to know and figure out a way to use those relationships to get the value you need. And then finally, if you can't do any of that, then you've got indirect sensors, where indirect sensors measure something that is not necessarily unrelated, but more distantly related to what you want to know about. So an example might be if you want to know the speed of the wind in a wind tunnel, you might measure that using pressure or measure that using temperature, where you're not actually directly measuring it or even something directly related to it, but there's an equation or a formula or a model that you know that can relate to what you're measuring to what you want to know. This gets into a little bit of math that is sometimes known as observers, which we'll talk about in another module, where you're actually using sensors and a very accurate model of your system to figure out what state it's in, figure out what it's doing. We can get into that, like I said, a little bit later, but basically that's the three types of sensors. And the only other thing that is really important to know is that a lot of times the decision that comes down to whether you use a direct, indirect, or derived might come down to price, because as they said a lot of times when I used to be in even elementary school, when you're measuring something, the more zeros you add, the more money it costs. So if you if you want to measure something directly or you want to measure something to really high resolution, that's going to cost you cash. And so you got to make that decision of how expensive or how accurate you need to make a measurement and how much processing you need to be able to process the data once you get it. And we'll talk about that in a couple minutes.
Yep. So sensors, generally speaking, they'll spit out an analog signal, unless it's a digital sensor, but even then it's usually an analog sensor that's got a DAC built into it. So the analog signals are great, but your controller will have no idea what to do with them. So that's where data acquisition comes in. You'll have a DAC in this case, DAQ, data acquisition. DAC can also mean DAC, digital to analog converter, which we'll talk about later. But basically what you need to know is there are two different domains. There's analog and digital. Analog signals are continuous. Digital signals are discrete.
Records and CDs.
Yes, that's a good way to look at it. And so you need a way to convert from that analog value to a digital value that your processor can use. So as the signal comes out of your sensor, you might need to do some initial signal conditioning, some amplification, things like that, to put it into the range that your data acquisition hardware can use. Then you have the actual data acquisition platform, which is usually a dedicated piece of hardware and some software that runs on a computer behind the scenes. Data acquisition device will take that analog signal, turn it into a digital signal at a certain bit depth, so a certain number of bits per signal or per sample, and a certain sampling rate, so a certain number of samples per second. And those are the big things you need to focus on for data acquisition. You're going to need to know how fast you need a signal and how accurate that sampling needs to be. There will generally be a trade-off, and both of those things, as you say, you can add zeros for adding money. You can have infinite accuracy for infinite dollars. You'll have to choose how accurate and how fast you want to sample. The DAC will spit out a digital value. You may also have a digital value coming from your sensor if it has a built-in DAC or if it's something like an encoder. So data acquisition platforms will usually have both analog and digital inputs. So you'll want to know what kind of signal you're bringing in and what kind of voltage range it's in, what kind of bit depth it is, things like that. So once it's in your system, then you continue to condition the signal. So you might filter it to remove extraneous noise, and you might have to convert it into, if it's a digital signal, you might have to convert it from a sensor value to something that's meaningful to your controller. So the most common digital signal you're going to encounter will be an encoder. And so an encoder is a digital signal which is related to the position, but you have to decode it. So there are a lot of ways to do that, and a lot of software or hardware even sometimes that is dedicated to doing that. After all of these steps, you end up with a bunch of digital data, which represents the values that came out of your sensors in a way that your controller can actually use. And then you need to take that data and actually do something meaningful with it. And that's where the processor comes in.
Yeah. So on the processor side, you again get into the same type of scenario where there's thousands of different types of processors that'll do all sorts of different things for you. And so basically, without having to go through all of them, the easiest way to describe them is basically to break them down into the different general categories of processors that are used most commonly in controls. And again, in terms of the scale of how much money you want to spend and how good you want your controller or need your controller to be, a lot of this just comes down to the time constant of your system, which I think we will have talked about a little bit, which is basically how fast your system responds and how, therefore, how quickly you need your controller to act. So it all comes down to the speed you need your controller to run. And then once you know how fast you need it to run, everything else falls away from that in terms of, is it really complicated and has to go really fast, in which case you need a very powerful processor, or is it a reasonably simple algorithm but has to go very, very fast, in which case a very simple processor can handle it, and that generally speaking costs less money. Starting with the most complex controller, you get into basically general purpose processors, which are everything from a laptop processor that can run both your control code and manage your hardware system with a controller that you've designed, but also maybe run Fortnite or browse the internet. Like, it's general purpose. It does many, many things. But because of that, it has a lot of horsepower, a lot of processing power that it can apply to a controller to be able to deal with all sorts of different complexity or deal with really complex models or things like that.
But it also has a lot more overhead. There's other stuff going on that you don't necessarily need.
And they're very expensive. Yeah. So there's definitely trade-offs. To eliminate some of that overhead, you can get things like industrial PCs, which are a little bit more dedicated to an industrial control task, or even at a more dedicated level below that, PLCs, which are a very particular type of industrial PC that runs very dedicated logic that you can program yourself in a very sort of closed environment that lets you get that piece of general purpose processor hardware just running a very, very particular algorithm.
Extremely reliably.
Extremely reliably forever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're also very expensive. So again, this level is, because it's so flexible, generally speaking, pretty expensive. But then the next level down, which gets radically cheaper, is if you get into embedded processors, things like microcontrollers, where you have a piece of hardware that can run still a pretty flexible algorithm, but it's less flexible. So you have less options in terms of the software or the operating system or how powerful the processor is. You have, generally speaking, a pretty low-end processor, pretty low-end hardware in terms of the amount of memory or the amount of storage you have. and interfacing is a little more difficult. You have, for instance, maybe a little bit less ability to run other operating systems or other types of programming languages.
Less ability to interface with other hardware as well.
Yeah.
You might have to have dedicated hardware. As opposed to like a general purpose PC where you could use a USB port or something.
Exactly, yeah. And also even something to consider is that the realm of people who know how to use it becomes less. So the number of people who do PC programming is a lot larger than the number of people who do microcontroller programming. So the realm of talent is lower. At the same time, they're much cheaper. Buying an Arduino or a Raspberry Pi is a much less expensive proposition than buying an industrial PC. So if you have a budget and you know the sample rate doesn't have to be that bad and your complexity of your controller is not that complex, then an embedded processor might be the way to go.
And if you're only usually running like one controller, microprocessors usually do one job as
generally
opposed to
speaking,
a general
process. You can get ones that are dual core, but generally, you're running a single thread with a single process.
Yeah.
The next level down from that would be something hyper dedicated to control, which is something like a controller chip. A control chip is something that you might get from an electronics supplier or a control supplier or robotics company that does a very particular control algorithm on an embedded circuit. So it might be something like a motor controller, like a DC motor controller or a temperature controller. And you would basically buy it for cents on the dollar. And it would let you basically implement just that common algorithm, probably something like a PID controller, on just that type of hardware. And because it's so hyper-specific, they're really inexpensive and you can get them for a number of different, like there is still flexibility. You can still tune your control parameters. You can still, for instance, with a DC motor controller, add the ability for it to automatically brake. You can still add the ability for it to deal with different types of motors and things like that. But generally speaking, because it's so inflexible in what it does, it's not that expensive and you can get them pretty easily for a particular common problem or common control task. But from there, we need to then get those signals out somewhere, back to the hardware to make it react to whatever the controller has said it needs to do.
Yeah, because the controller, at the end of the day, is just doing math. It's just spitting out a number or multiple numbers. And so we've gone from the physical domain through the data acquisition into the processor. Now we need to get back to the physical domain so we can actually do some work. So the output from a processor is generally going to be, again, a digital value. The output of the processor goes to memory, and you need to take that digital value, turn it back into an analog signal in most cases. So you're going to need now a digital to analog converter, takes a digital signal and makes it a voltage. And then that voltage is going to be really, really small, and it's going to have very little power. The processor doesn't have the ability to put out a whole lot of current. So you'll need an amplifier, similar to what you might have done amplifying a sensor signal coming in. You're going to need to take this, but now this is a power amplifier. You want to take the signal coming out of the processor and decouple the work that's being done from the processor. So you'll use an amplifier, which generally speaking will switch on and off power from another source in order to give you the same voltage or the same current coming out, but without drawing power on the processor. So you want really high input impedance, or you want to put as little load on the processor as possible. And then once you come out of the amplifier, you end up with a signal, electrical signal that can be used to do work. If your system is an electrical control system, then you're done. That voltage coming out is going to feed back into your system. You might have a power supply or a speaker or something, and that voltage is going to go straight to whatever it's doing, and you'll be done. But if you need to make something move, for instance, then you might need a motor. So you'll get electromechanical motors. You have solenoids, which are generally linear actuators. You can have rotational solenoids. Or if you need to do more work, you could have something like a brushed or brushless DC motor or a stepper motor, which gives you a little more control over the position that you're going to go to or how fast your motor is going. So those are all electromechanical systems. One step further, you might use a solenoid to switch on or switch off a pneumatic or hydraulic force going to a piston or a turbine. So you could do work at a distance or really, really large forces exerted are generally done with hydraulics or pneumatics. And then the last kind of actuation that you're likely going to see is radiation or heat. It's actually a fairly common control task. So there you might be taking that electrical energy and using it to heat up a heating coil, or you might be turning on a light or turning on a radio frequency broadcast or turning on a compressor that will run an air conditioner. These are all things that will take that electrical energy and turn it into thermal or radiation energy. So all of this is allowing you to take those numbers that come out of the processor and turn them back into something that you want to control. So if you're controlling heat, you sense it, you filter it, you process it, and then you turn it back into heat so you can control the temperature.
And there's one final thing I think we should cover, which is that all of these different elements, when it comes down to how you select the pieces and how you build this in the real world, they're all very interdependent. The sensor you pick is going to be very highly dependent on the type of signal processing it needs or the type of data acquisition it needs. And once you get from that information into your processor, depending on what type of system it is and what sensors you've used, you may or may not need a more or less complex processor. If you need to model the entire system because you're doing indirect sensing, you need a much more complex processor maybe to be able to build that model. And then for the actuation side, depending on how many actuators you're running and how intricate the actuation interplay system and how many there are, you might need a more complex processor or need more sensors. And
it's a very holistic process. Exactly. You need to look at the whole system and decide if there is a key thing that you need. If it's like, I need a very, very high accuracy data acquisition, then you need a sensor that's going to support that. And then you need a processor that can process it, things like that. So,
yeah.
But yeah, these are all considerations that tend to be overlooked in the theoretical control. So.
Yeah, hopefully these modules will give you the background you need to be able to take whatever it is, the controller that you've designed and built in software, and actually make it do work and make it do controlled work in the real world.